Man, I can't wait for Cole to give both of these movies a 2.5.
Listen, there's one of these films, I'm not giving it 2.5. You don't have to guess which one that is.
Both of them?
Sure. Am I actually like 3 for 3 now for 2.5s? I think I am, right? For the Mancot podcast? I think I get everything 2.5. I think what was the first one we did the Invisible Superman guy, the Hunt.
And Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh yeah, they are all 2.5s for me. It's not my fault that all those films are okay but also bad at the same time.
Welcome everybody to another episode of Unimportant Film Opinions. I'm Colby.
I'm Cole.
I'm Devin.
And today we're going to talk about a couple of movies, but we're just welcoming you to the UFO. We're glad you're here. The first movie I want to talk about is a movie that's come out this year. It's on Amazon. It's called The Vast of Night. And you might have already figured that out because it's the title of the podcast. But either way, So basically, it takes place in the 1950s, and it's about two younger people, a switchboard operator and a radio DJ, and they discover an audio frequency, and they are trying to discover what that means. I mean, that's about...
Now you got it.
The gist of it. So, it's a pretty small-scale movie. It's not a grandiose sci-fi film. It's not a Blade Runner 2049. It's a very small... scale movie, and which is something that I enjoy small scale sci-fi movies. Examples like Under the Skin. I really enjoy movies that are sci-fi movies like that. I'm kind of done with that, like, big scale world is and what are we gonna do sci-fi. I just like a little picture in what could be. 10 Cloverfield Lane is another one. It's just a little picture of something small. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I was thinking when I said we should watch this film. So
isn't this also like the debut direction of this director? I think his name is something Peterson, Andrew Peterson, or Patterson?
It is Andrew Patterson's debut film, and I think there's a lot of interesting things he does here.
I'd agree. I also want to mention, before we get into that, we've done some things about, like, you know, first-time directors on one of the other smaller discussions we've had, and this kind of fits right in with that. I think he also, the most of the budget was done by the director himself, right? If I'm correct, too. So this is definitely more on the small scale, but it definitely seems like he has a lot of what was done here was definitely from Andrew Patterson for his creative control, which is very cool to see from a first-time director.
And I think that it can be a bad thing. And I mentioned this before, you know, like a Neil Breen, right? Having total control can be a bad thing. It can be horrible.
Listen. No. You're bringing up the best example of how it could be amazing. I don't know why I use that as a bad example. This is an amazing example. But
it can also be awesome. You've got things like Moonlight or Manchester. I bring up those examples a lot, but they're movies that are written and directed.
Thunder Road,
Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. They're written and directed by the same person, and that's good. That's great. That's fun.
Okay.
So, because, you know, all the creative vision is right there.
Yeah.
But you also know who to blame, which is good.
Yeah, the actors, right? Not the writers. They're great. Yeah. Always right, yeah.
Obviously.
So I think the first thing I want to talk about right off the bat is the cinematography. Like, the look of the movie, because I'm going to be honest with you guys. I struggled with it because I liked the look of the film. It pulled off a 1950s look. You know, the beginning of the movie starts off in like this, like a 1950s black and white television set, and then kind of pans into what becomes the movie, which is color. But god damn it, those fucking blacks are disgusting. And I don't think it's just because of, I'm like,
no, I agree.
I don't, yeah,
I had the same thing. Everything is just such a dark, like blue black sort of thing with no other contrast, so it's some scenes kind of hard to tell what's going on. And then,
and I'm trying,
oh, go ahead.
No, please go.
I was just gonna say, and then it was weirdly contrasted with the very like nicotine yellow lights of the basketball game. When it went to that, it kind of hurt my eyes because I was so used to the black. Does that make sense? And I know blue and yellow is supposed to be a good color combination, but not with these shades.
I think the contrast, my big thing is, I'm trying not to be spoiled with my TV, but and my setup, but I mean,
here we go.
Come on. You know, and I think anybody can tell when something that's supposed to be black is mostly a bluish gray. And in turn, it looks grody to me.
Yeah.
And this is one of the worst cases of it. Not one of the worst cases. Maybe I'm being dramatic. But it's super murky, and I just feel like I'm being bombarded throughout the whole thing. And would you guess The Vast of Night, it takes place mostly at night. And I'm trying not to start off on the wrong foot, because I'm trying not to say the movie's bad. I'm just saying I wish there was something different about it, because that is by far my biggest, I'm just getting my biggest complaint out of the way. That is my biggest complaint right there. I don't know. What about you, Cole? Did you have issues with the color, with the blacks, with any of that?
Oh no, I was waiting for you to get off your soapbox there. I'll chime in. All right.
There's not a soapbox.
All right.
It's obvious. It's obvious.
All right. I think when it comes to the colorization of the film, I'm don't have the best opinion of it because I watch on a monitor, and my monitor is generally on gaming mode because I am a gamer. Okay, so a lot of the blacks I see are usually whited out. I don't really see, like, what was the last one we saw that we discussed that the blacks were really well done before earlier? I can't remember what it was called. Anyway, some films have some good colorization for me, but for this film, it kind of blended into a lot of others where I think it's a more of a monitor issue than a film issue for me. So I didn't really notice it too much.
This was a film issue. Oh. I can guarantee it.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'll take your word on it.
I have to agree with Colby on that.
maybe it's just a gigantic pet peeve, but when the blacks are gray, things aren't as defined, and it takes away a lot of the film for me. That's all. That's my biggest issue with it. And the actual cinematography otherwise is actually pretty good. There's a lot of long takes in the film.
Yeah.
A lot. And although they're not necessarily like, I don't know, show-offy or have 15,000 extras, there's still a lot of dialogue to be processed. I think that the best example, though, my favorite one take, is probably the basketball one.
Oh, really?
I like that one a lot. There's a lot going on. The one where the two characters are just walking down the street is kind of boring. I feel like it's kind of like just watching two people having a conversation, and I feel like it's impressive. But at the same time, I didn't understand the point of it. So
yeah.
The one takes were nice. The one takes were impressive. the actors did a good job with all of it, but it, the one takes eventually got, you know, backseated to the kind of almost pointlessness of.
Just to piggy off your
go for
one
it.
Takes. You mentioned yours favorite being the basketball game. Mine was when the woman, I think her name is Faye Crocker. I think she's played like Sierra. When she was on the telephone board or the communications board, and it's a very simple as far as camera work goes, it's just a very slow zoom. But for what she was able to, they had to do with not only like operating the board and putting the proper channels into each cord, but also have, I think it was like at least 8 different conversations plus with different people at different times. Mm-hmm. To memorize that, to me, it would be just I couldn't do that, and that was just fun. That was really interesting for her to be able to do that.
I think that was a really good one too. That was an impressive. I agree. That was a really good one as well.
Like technical wise, like it was good. It was okay. Like, it was impressive. But as far as like acting wise, like I was like, damn, I'm sold on that. Great job.
My favorite shot was the tracking shot where it goes from the her switchboard to the basketball game to the guy at the radio station, where it's just kind of like moving throughout the whole town. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I will say that. I feel like you actually got a good, not an amazing, but a good sense of the directions to go in this town and where things were located compared to each other.
Yeah.
I kind of just want to go through like the film as, you know, from A to Z. Like, I feel this film, at the start, kind of drew me in a lot. I enjoyed the first 23 minutes of this film very much so. And this is all we're talking about, like all those one-shots, you know, from the basketball game to walking to the houses to the operating switch. Like that whole like all those scenarios like drew me in right away. I think that was where the film was at for its best.
Really?
Yeah.
I actually thought the first 30 minutes was some of the most boring 30 minutes I've ever seen in any movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's unpack this. Let me hear this.
So first off, the whole part where he's in the basketball game in the beginning and everyone's like saying that what is it, the principal's looking for him? Then when he finally finds the principal's like, no, I didn't mean you, I meant the other guy. So that whole part was just kind of pointless. And then it shows like him walking with the girl, and they're just, like Colby was saying, all this conversation that didn't really go anywhere, didn't really pertain to anything. And it was just so slow-paced and just went on for so long.
See, for me, I enjoyed the dialogue. I think the whole first 20 minutes of like setup with the characters and their back and forth, I bought into it very, very fast. I wouldn't say it's like as gripping or as like I do, you guys know, like I get Aaron Sorkin dialogue, you know, from West Wing and from Newsroom. His dialogue is it's almost like non-human with how fast it is and how intellectual it sounds, but this is a lot more, I wouldn't say dumbed down, but it was at a very similar brisk pace, and it's not exactly normal to have that kind of dialogue, but I do enjoy it in film. I feel like they pulled it off very well in this one.
What happened with me is I liked the beginning. I liked all the stuff with the school. I liked them leaving and the beginning of that shot, and then I felt like it dragged because this movie is like what, 95% dialogue? That's all this movie really is people talking with one another, and the tone isn't like a buddy, obviously it's not a buddy cop tone. So it kind of gets it just kind of wears. It was wearing on me after a while. Once they got to the point where there was something to discover, I started to get invested again. But I do wonder if this is, and this, I'm not taking any credit for this, I did read this somewhere, and I think it's a great take on it, so I'm not taking credit. The idea that this is more of an experiment and less of a movie is almost like, after I read that, it's like, yeah, that's almost like what I think now, because you've got these one takes. It's almost like a Black Mirror episode or Twilight Zone. So much dialogue that it's insane. Like, you don't normally see that kind of stuff. So it's like, it's trying to create its own thing. It's like an experiment. It's carving something out. It's definitely not conforming. No movie should. But it seems experimental in a way.
For the writing? Or for...
Just in general. Okay. Just in how it tries to pull off its one takes and all of that. So
yeah, honestly, I was throughout the movie, I was kind of wondering if it was something along those lines, or if it was like a short film that they tried to like stretch into a full feature. Because it kind of feels like it should have been a short film, in my opinion.
See, I think we're talking about like almost. I think you're saying like it's almost very similar. It also has, obviously, it has these not symbolism. It has these reminders, or it's obviously inspired. I mean, by what's that? I keep thinking it's called The Scary Door from now on, from Futurama. What's it called? You said it's Twilight Zone. How it's obviously inspired like that, and it almost plays out like one, right? You know, an hour long episode of that. I personally feel like the time that was. For the film, I think it's like an hour and 20 minutes, maybe a little more than that, an hour and 25. I think it was definitely earned. I don't feel like it was too long or too short, personally. Again, I feel like the first third of the film, I heavily was invested. I enjoyed it a lot. I also really enjoyed the way they crafted the stories. So in this film, there are some stories being told to the main characters by other people that help you to develop the idea of what's happening in this town. And I think I was very, like, when those stories were being told by these two different people, that was probably the most invested I was into the film past the first third.
We're talking about the old lady?
We're talking about the character Billy and the woman in the house, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The way that they told their stories, I was like, I was very invested into their dialogue.
Oh, speaking of when Billy was talking, am I the only one that was kind of a little bit annoyed by it? But one of the times when he was talking, the whole image turned black, so it was just the dialogue. That was kind of weird, in my opinion. I didn't really like that.
So I know they use it several times throughout the film. I wasn't quite sure why they're using it. I know I wasn't bothered by it personally. I didn't quite get Silas' choice by it. Did you, Colby?
I don't really recall it, so therefore it doesn't bother me.
Okay. Yeah, so I think there's like three times or so, I want to say, in the film where they're talking to characters, or they're switching a scene, or somebody's talking, and they'll switch from what's happening to a black screen and then go out to... kind of like an old, old television set, and then go back into the film.
Yep. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that didn't really bother me. I just kind of, I don't know what the point was. I agree with the with your guys's baffledness. I don't want to say baffledness. With the confusion.
Well,
I saw Cats recently to laugh at it. I was just. I was telling Devin recently just to laugh at it, and I was so baffled by how stupid it was. So the word baffle is like part of my vocabulary.
It wasn't so much that whole like television screen thing. Yeah. It was when Billy was talking and it was just a black screen until one of the other characters had a question, then it came back into the image without the television set thing. And it was just kind of, was it laziness because they couldn't figure out what to have on the screen, or were they just thinking that way you focus more on the dialogue? Either way, I feel like they could have at least like maybe shown maybe Billy where he was at, or maybe like some of his memories, kind of like play that on the screen sort of thing.
See, I personally, I like how it is. I don't think I'd change it. I like having a character because I feel this is really grounded and the film does very well being grounded in this one town, and having a character describe to you what's happened somewhere else in vivid detail kind of allows the character to imagine what's happening along with the characters who are listening to him.
And another thing that's interesting is he's a radio DJ, right? Mm-hmm. So there's no visuals that come along with that. And I know he's not. It's just a parallel with it. So it does not bother me.
Nah, same. I actually prefer it this way, personally. I will say, though, I feel this film, for me at least, kind of, I wouldn't say drags, but the lower points for me definitely in the final third of the film. After you kind of realize what's happening, you're putting pieces together, and, you know, things start occurring. I don't know what it was. I can't pinpoint a certain one scene or one piece of dialogue or one thing, but I kind of tuned out a little bit, and I wish I could get into more detail. But the grip the film had in the first third of the film and during the story was kind of lost.
For me, the way that the movie went along, it felt very predictable. Like Billy talking and the woman talking, stuff like that. A lot of it's kind of like stuff that's like we've heard before. We can figure out what's going to happen at the end. I figured out like pretty much the ending in the first half of the movie. I don't know if you had that similar thing, but that's kind of why the ending wasn't that great for me.
I do like the visual of the ending, though. I think it's a cute story overall, and I do think it has a good ending, but I don't... Yeah, I agree it's not the most original ending or the most twisty ending, but, you know, it's a visual ending. I like how it looks, and I'm okay. I'm okay with it. You know, I don't need a story to always give me a twist and a turn. But with that said, the movie in general, as we've talked about, is kind of plays on the more boring side. So with it also having an ending that you kind of already can figure out from the beginning, plays into the more boringness of it.
Yeah.
So you really have to like get into the visuals and get into the one takes and get into, wow, these guys are pulling off some neat things when they act and the story. But my complaint about how murky it is, that's where that complaint really comes in, because I can't get into the visuals because it looks like shit. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's why I'm getting in. I got into the movie like halfway all the time.
Yeah. And then you had like, where it was like kind of mingling like UFO tropes with like Red Scare tropes and adding those together sort of, because like a lot of the stuff that's happening, the radio DJ guy keeps bringing up like communism or Russians or whatever like that. That's another thing that I've seen a million times in sci-fi movies, especially like in like old radio shows did that a lot. A lot of Twilight Zone episodes kind of did similar things. So with the plot being so minimal and then the plot also not being very like new in any way, kind of made for the story itself to be boring to me.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing to this film is I feel that there's a lot of inspiration from films, even though you don't see it, there's no direct contrast apart from the Twilight Zone. There's a lot of, you know, think like The Blob, X-Files, even things like from like Encounters of the Third Kind type stuff occurring. Like there's a lot of like inspiration that the film takes from those films. And obviously, you know, with I'm not American, so I guess you said it was the Red Scare with communism in Russia. Like that is also very prevalent in the 50s, for you guys, or 60s, whenever this film takes place. I don't know. I feel it's almost very similar to like It Follows, where it's very obvious, but it's also very obviously inspired as well. So it also plays in those cliches, not as well, I would say, but definitely very similar.
Yeah, and I'm someone who's okay with the journey, knowing the ending, but okay with the journey. A lot of movies give away the ending of generally, right at the beginning. And then it's all about the journey. So
yeah,
I'm okay with that.
I got a couple things. One of the things, I don't know if you guys, this bothered you either, but you know, when the old lady in the house, she's like, or they say they don't have a lot of time. She's like, so I'll get right to the point. And then she just starts like talking about her whole like childhood and then like all that kind of stuff until she finally gets to the whole point with like her son and like the broadcast, whatever like that. But she's like, I'll get right to the point. She just rambles on about her life for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like
again, that doesn't really bother me. I felt like the radio guy was kind of being a dick about it.
Yeah,
in a way, because he's like, "Thanks for inviting me in. I don't have a lot of time. Tell me your story so I can leave." That's kind of like the way I was getting it from him.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like,
yeah, same.
Fuck you, guy. You know what I mean? So
yeah, I think that also was it played well. This character, he's a very fast talking guy who wants to get things done. He mentioned there's a history of him like not being able to communicate well with girls sometimes and piss people off. So I get that, I feel like it worked for the story. And also, let's be honest, I mean, what was happening during that night, you'd kind of want to be going out and getting things done and find out what's happening as well. So
yeah,
true.
Yeah.
Do you remember the scene when they go into the woods and like they see something in the sky? It's implied they see, you know, the flying object, whatever like that. But they're looking through the trees, and it like pans. The cameras pan past the trees a little bit, but they don't go towards where the flying object actually is. But then it keeps going from that to the characters. There was just something very awkward about that, and I understood what they were trying to go for. But at the same time, I feel like if they just stayed on the faces of the characters instead of panning across the trees, it would have been a lot more impactful. But what do you guys think? Do you like the way that they did it?
So, have you seen the movie Thoroughbreds?
Never even heard of it.
Okay. There's a scene in that movie where instead of showing a murder, they stay locked in on the female actress while someone's being murdered, if I recall. And that was pretty impactful.
Yeah.
And then just kind of her reaction to it, you know, and she's just kind of curled up in a ball. And so things like that can work really well just by getting a character's emotion. And you, especially in movies that don't have like a huge budget. So I think it could have worked, but I don't think that the way it happened is, I'm not annoyed with how it happened either. So I was just trying to give an example of a movie that I thought did it really well.
Yeah.
You know, because this is a movie where letting your imagination, you know, a lot of times you had mentioned it cuts to black over narration. Mm-hmm. It's letting your imagination come up with things. So it could have done that there as well. Could have.
Yeah.
Could have, would have, should have. Maybe. I don't know.
To me, it was just almost like funny how they just kept showing like the sky and then like, oh, we're about to panto, but nope, back to the characters. I don't know. It almost felt like if you didn't know any better, it's like the characters are just reacting to the night sky in general. But that's not what was going on.
Well, see, my issue is that the night sky looked like a gray blob.
Yeah.
It looked like a fucking, I don't even know. It just looked like trash. It looked like a trash bag. So that's what annoyed me.
Yeah, that too.
So I would have rather just looked at their faces.
Exactly.
Because I could at least make that out.
Yeah.
I think we're good talking about the film, right?
Well, I have one question. Okay. One final question. What do you think about the chemistry between these two actors and the characters? because I'd never seen him before that I recall.
Again, for me, I enjoyed the first bit of the film, so I found both their communication and their relationship to be pretty well done. I think the term synergy or something like that was, I felt it was there. It wasn't spectacular, but I felt it worked for me. Worked for the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much my take. The guy did pretty good. The girl was really good, I thought, for acting. And they definitely played off each other pretty well, bouncing back and forth with their dialogue.
Yeah, I enjoyed how they worked with each other. I thought that it was authentic enough.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that. If we talk about what our ratings are for the movie, I have mine's a bit complicated, so I'm gonna let someone else start. Devin, why don't you start?
Sure. I gave it a 1.5.
Ouch. Oh.
It's very close to being okay to me, but it just doesn't quite hit there with the slow pacing. It definitely does some things right, but it's not a movie I'd ever want to watch again.
All right.
My turn? Or
all right.
Do you want to
go for it, Cole? Yeah.
Your confusing feelings for a bit. You
wanna... No, well... Go for it, and then I'll tell you about mine.
All right. I feel for this film, again, I say it again and again, but the first 20, 30 minutes, if you watch that, you will get, if you don't, and you will enjoy the most, for me at least, from my point of view, for the first third of the film. And after there's some good points, but it kind of tapers off a bit. I bounce between a 3 and 3.5, but as I think of the film more and more, I lean closer to a 3. Again, I feel like the technical aspects were fantastic in some portions of the film. I know you mentioned the colors were off. I think you'd see that more than I would. I feel the acting was pretty well done. I feel the one takes, especially again with the one with Faye Crocker, and I forget that actress's name. I think it's Sierra. Amazing. It's a fantastic scene. Love it. But at the end of the day, as a film as a whole, it's close to a 3. It's a 3, but it's closer to a 3.5.
So this... I would be interested in seeing more of this person's work, the director's work, for sure.
Agreed.
When I first finished the movie, I was like, all right, this is a 2 out of 5 for me. The more I thought about it, I was thinking, if this movie didn't look like such garbo, I think I would give it a 3. Like, if the blacks were black, I think I would be at a 3, like, forgetting everything else about it. So I think I'm more at, like, a 2.5 for it. I'm kind of, like, just going to give it right in the middle. And I'm trying to be... So I'm the 2.5 person this time. But that's my biggest reason. Maybe I'm stuck on how murky it is, even though these guys didn't have the budget to have what they wanted. For me, that was the biggest thing holding it back. I think that they had an idea that was interesting. I think that they had actors that were energetic. I think the storyline was... I like those sci-fi movies that are just like simple instead of grand. So it had all these things that I really like. But the thing that just held it back was the fact that I couldn't make out half the details or more. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at, is a 2.5. So if you already have a TV that, or like a really crappy monitor like Cole's, I guess, then it doesn't much matter.
I'm a gamer.
But, interested in seeing more of this director, Andrew Patterson, for sure. He seems to have some neat ideas.
Just not good color concept, apparently.
Maybe he just needs the money. He's got a sweet beard. So,
oh, wow, holy, he does.
with that said,
he's like a mini Hagrid.
He is. You know, Amazon thought it was neat enough to pick it up, you know what I mean, for release. So that doesn't necessarily mean anything, because sometimes Amazon originals are pretty crappy, just like Netflix and Hulu originals are.
Speaking of the next film, you know. Damn, spoilers, man.
What's that?
You're mentioning how other films that they pick up aren't really that well. Well, let's talk about the next film.
It's not picked up by Netflix.
Isn't it by Netflix?
I don't think so. We had to rent it on Vudu.
Yeah, I don't think it's picked up by anybody.
Oh, no, I thought it was on Amazon Prime, wasn't it?
No.
I mean, Canada was. Oh, I'm wrong. Edit it out. Edit this out. It's gone. Get rid of this.
Okay. Wrong.
But that's a natural transition to the next movie we watch.
How's that now?
A fucking beautiful masterpiece.
Wow.
At least that's what Cole said.
Cole.
Actually, you were telling me.
Next film we're talking about is going to be Becky, released in 2020. Starring, well, most notably, what's his name? Kevin James. And with, I think this is her first film debut, Lulu Wilson.
No, she was in other films.
Oh, she was? Well,
yeah, she was in Annabelle Creation. I remember her from that.
Okay, so let's
And The Haunting of Hill House, and Sharp Objects, and Ouija. Yeah, you got that one wrong.
Wow. Well, listen, I'm going to watch any of those films for good reason, okay?
Sharp Objects is great. And Haunting of Hill House, I didn't like every episode. It had some really good episodes.
I will say I've never seen Sharp Objects, so I don't know what you're talking about. Everything else you've stated, though, I'm instantly bleh about. Anyway.
Also, I liked Annabelle Creation, I'm just saying.
Well, that's out in the air now.
Annabelle Creation was the
I'm
best.
Gonna, I'm going to stop right there and go back to the film, okay? We can talk about this later. Becky came out in 2020. The film centers around a daughter and a father who lost another family member, the mother wife, going to a cabin in the woods type situation, you know, getaway place where they're meeting her father's future possible wife, you know, featuring fiance, and they encounter in this house some escaped convicts, and then the film pretty much turns into a horror version of Home Alone 3.
Yeah,
that's pretty much it. It's a horror version of Home Alone, not Home Alone 1 or 2, the good ones. No. It's a horror version of Home Alone 3. So let's go with that.
Hey, at least it's not a horror version of Home Alone 4. That one was the worst one.
It's almost there.
Actually, it probably is there.
I'll start off by saying I had fun watching this with Colby, and that's not a positive way I'm saying it. There were some great parts of this film that I'll say the positives. I think they did gore very well in this film. I felt that was done like with the blood and with some prosthetics with an eye makeup were done pretty well. And yeah, that's about it.
Although, speaking of blood, you know, just because this doesn't really go with anything else, but you know the part where Becky is like wiping off her face with something? None of the blood comes off because it's just like dry makeup.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. I remember that.
It was just so, like, pointless.
Wow. There goes my gun out the window. I guess we're missing that. Jeez.
I gotta say that I was excited to see this movie.
Why?
For the same reason I was excited to see a movie, I might be excited to see a movie like Cats. And that is because I go into it knowing that it's going to suck major shit and I'm going to get some laughs at it. And at least Becky delivered on that, unlike Cats, which maybe we'll talk about that one day.
I'm not watching that. You're not going to make me watch that.
But I was really I was genuinely curious about Kevin James doing a serious role. I was seriously curious about it and how he could do it. And you know what? when you see him in the prison, it's fucking funny. But something about it, I was kind of excited to see. And I don't know if it was because looking at him with his funny bald head that looks like you, Cole, or if it was like...
Hi, that's me.
I don't... What?
I'm the guy's bald. Bald jokes are fun. We love bald jokes here.
I don't know, but I was actually excited after I saw that.
I mean, let's be really honest.
And then
here.
It just got really, really bad.
Let's be really honest here.
Not like excited because this movie's good excited, but excited because this is going to be fun to laugh at.
If this film didn't have Kevin James playing the bad guy in a dramatic role, would you even check this film out at all?
No.
So this film pretty much boils down to Kevin James is a racist KKK member, Ku Klux Klan, whatever, and it's Home Alone horror film. That's the only reason to watch it.
But hey, speaking,
I mean, yeah.
While we're on the subject of Kevin James acting in a serious role, what are your guys' thoughts on it? If you take away the movie and just look at his performance, what did you think?
Corny.
I would like to see him again in another dramatic role. You know, very similar to I feel in general comedians can bring great dramatic performances to TV shows and films. I mean, I know film-wise last year there was with Uncut Gems. Shoot, who was his name?
Adam Sandler?
I'm letting you think of it.
Adam Sandler. I know it's Adam something. So yeah, Adam Sandler.
Adam like, Sandler.
Yeah. Even with, you know, we can go to TV series and think of Breaking Bad. You know, pretty much like half the cast there are comedians.
You could think Zach Galifianakis and Birdman, stuff like that.
Yeah. I personally love trying to catch a comedian's performance in a dramatic role. So it would be the first time or to have some history with it, just to see how it pans out. I would like to see more of it from Kevin James if possible. I know also, if people don't know, if they're interested, he actually has a YouTube channel that I found to be hit or miss, but it's really cool seeing him kind of producing his own content. So you can go check it out on YouTube. It's just Kevin James's name.
Yeah, I thought that would be interesting to talk about too, because it's mostly misses for me, if I'm going to be honest with
That's
you.
That's fair.
But the one about There Will Be Blood is pretty funny.
Yeah, he actually got the, I think it was the director actually participated in that too. It's pretty
cool. Yeah, PTA, Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yeah.
As for me, for what I thought of his acting, I think it's kind of disappointing that it's in a movie where it doesn't really give much room for him to really show his acting chops if he you know has any, you know, in this sort of thing. But I actually was kind of surprised that it wasn't like completely horrible. I wasn't laughing at his acting, if that makes sense, and I kind of was expecting to. But like you said, it does get corny at times, and I think a lot of that is because there's nowhere really he can go with it with this kind of script.
I do feel like this is a great example you can use. You can't really judge an actor in this film, and maybe it sounds terrible, but I'm putting a lot of the blame here on whether the director or the writer, because Jesus, there were some of the parts in this film were dialogue wise, especially for like the two other home invaders that weren't Kevin James or Apex, the big guy. Like it was almost kind of like they're trying to do like a Three Stooges type dynamic, which just really did not work at all. It's kind of like a gold, say who was the dumbest person in the room.
Yeah. It was like,
and surprisingly, there's three writing credits for this movie.
Oh God.
Was it those three convicts?
It looks like two brothers and someone else for a movie that looks like it could have been written by someone who was six or seven. So,
I really want to get into talking about certain scenes. What was your, for like a quote unquote favorite scene from this film or funniest in some degree? I kind of found it hilarious how I feel like, you know, the character Apex, the big, the strong, you know, the big muscular convict. I can't feel like he was more fleshed out and developed in the minor scenes that he had compared to the main character, the daughter. Which,
So I agree. The motivations for the dad didn't make any fucking sense. Like, just hand over whatever you have, right?
Yeah.
And then the movie would have been over. I mean, so then that would have been stupid because the movie would have been over. But the motivations didn't make any fucking sense.
Well, I think a good example for... Well, obviously they're using the key as kind of like a, I don't know what the term is, like a MacGuffin type scenario where it's used to further the plot. And you can create an example like that where it's done very well. And what was the film with the golden briefcase from Tarantino? Pulp Fiction. Both serve a very similar narrative of pushing the story along, right? But one is done well, the other one is just there for the sake of being there.
Yeah.
One is also handed over in Pulp Fiction. The other one is held on to and not given over for a reason that is unexplainable. Legitimately unexplainable to me.
Yeah.
I also have no care in the world what it's used for at all. I kind of forgot it was there after. Another kept asking for it, but I just kind of didn't care what was going to happen with it at all.
Yeah. Speaking of not caring, I didn't care about any of the characters.
The only one that you sort of care about is the Apex.
Yeah, Apex. Again, he got the most development of anybody out of like the few scenes he was in.
When you think about it, you know who we know the least amount about? The main fucking character. We know the least amount about Becky out of anyone.
And she's just sort of a big bitch anyway.
And a fucking psychopath.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Let me take the bitch word back. That's mean. She's a psychopath.
I mean, she's just the paper thin archetype of an angry teenager with a dead mom, and that's pretty much it. There's nothing really else there.
Fucking Apex, like, oh, I know I've done a lot of bad things, but maybe saving you. Wow.
Spoiler. But like,
God damn, Gavin.
Yeah. Seriously, it was, ugh, it was dumb.
No more kids.
My favorite scene was when she was like trying to set up the whole like doc murder thing for one of the convicts, and again, it was very Home Alone-esque.
Yeah,
and it's kind of, I feel like it kind of failed completely. And a lot of the killing scenes are also really funny as well, with her swinging down and stabbing a guy in the eye of pencils, or literally trying to put a guy's face in a rowboat. Like, there are some funny elements in this film you could watch with a group of people, but it wasn't enough, man.
Dude, like, especially, like, taking a flimsy ruler, cutting it, or snapping in half with, like, small amount of effort, and then proceeding to, like, violently stab somebody, and then kicking it into them, and the ruler doesn't even move, doesn't even break. What? That didn't make any sense.
My favorite scenes, I have two. That's when the first time you see Kevin James in the prison, because it was like, wow, look, it's Cole. And then the second time you see him, in the fucking house, because both times it's supposed to be like super serious, like, oh shit, and it's just funny to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
My favorite scene is probably the scene with his eye out and he's trying to try to get the guy to cut it off, and he takes those fucking kid scissors.
Yeah. I feel like those are definitely more played up for joking, but if there were more of those scenes in this film, I would honestly love to watch it as a group. If the film was half of those scenes, this would be a fantastic film to watch as a joke.
Is it supposed to? Because that part does seem like a comedy. Like a comedy part, but is it?
I don't know.
This isn't supposed to be a comedy. I don't know. It seems like it's horribly... the tone seems seems like a misfire right there. That's all.
The way that the guy who directed it, like, talks about it, it definitely seems like he thought it was really good and really serious. I don't think he sees all the comedy and all the flaws of it.
I don't mean that, because like every single death in this film, except for the, you know, when they shoot the dog, apart from that, every single death in this film can be played for comedy, including the fathers. I feel like you can get a laugh almost out of every single one of them.
Looking at Kevin James with a wrap around his bald ass head because he had his eyeball plucked out is just comical.
And you're really playing that bald note, aren't you?
Well, he's funny looking.
He's funny.
Like, there's nothing about I don't know. But
also,
that's how I feel.
Oh, I was just going to say another thing that I did really like about the movie is those parallel shots between, like, the main character, Becky, and, like, and the bad guys. Do you know what I mean? Like, how it will be, like, it's almost like the camera is panning over, but it's actually switching to a different shot. And it's doing that whole parallel between those. I really like that. That was pretty cool.
Do you mean when it was going back from Becky to Kevin James in that fire pit scene? Or?
Yeah, and there's that scene. There's also when she's in school and it's paralleling her in school and them in the prison. And it keeps kind of doing that whole like transition thing.
I didn't like it that. Like, or were they trying to say like, oh, school's like prison and to her because she hates school now? Like,
I think so, yeah. But okay. I also just like that camera technique was just cool. But yeah, I definitely think they're going for that.
I don't really have a big problem with how this film looks generally. I think a lot, at least from what I remember, scene that we saw a little while ago, technically wise with lighting and editing and direction was okay. I didn't see anything like alarming, like, oh God, look at these blacks, Devin, dude, they're fucking crazy. I didn't see anything like that. But no, I think they are fine. But apart from that, no,
it's not like by any means a good looking movie. But it's not. At least the blacks are there.
I feel like every film review comes and be like the blacks were serviceable. It's a pretty good film, you know.
After carefully considering the color of this film.
to revisit your statement earlier on like fleshing out things, I gotta say, Devin and I talked about this when we talked about the Harley Quinn movie, but I didn't, by the end of the movie, I wasn't rooting for anybody, to be honest with you, so I didn't have any feelings about anything. Did you want to? Were you rooting for?
I wanted Apex to win. Yeah.
Well,
he's the only one that like has like
Apex obviously got his ass kicked.
I know.
So after that,
no.
Did you really care if?
I didn't care at all. No.
Because Becky's just like a super. She turns into like a horrible character.
Yeah.
And
very one.
All the criminals are so stupid. So it's like Kevin James is supposed to be like the smart criminal, but he's still an idiot. So it's like,
oh yeah. Speaking of that,
I don't know,
the whole time where he's like sitting there talking about like how long he's planned this thing out and how he went through all the scenarios, all the weak points, all of, you know, the possible endings and stuff like that and variables and how he had a strategy and stuff like that, but they had no fucking strategy. They had no communication. They had absolutely nothing. Like, they didn't even know how many people were in the house.
Didn't you see that whole entire, you know, moving car where like he nodded his head and they killed the guy really stealthily? Yeah, that was. I mean, that was that. Come on. So well done.
And speaking of that, about like not knowing the amount of people in the house. Does anybody else have the question, why is this key in this house anyway when it's owned by this family, but somehow they don't even know that it's owned by this family?
I got this, okay? I got this. So big brain conspiracy theory, okay? All right, so this whole time, Becky and her father and her mother were actually super racist and were in the KKK, okay? And this house was their meeting ground. So once the mother dies, the father's like, "Oh, holy shit! I'm not really racist anymore," and that's why he's about to marry a black girl, right? But the daughter's like, "Nah, fuck that! I'm still racist," and then she takes that key, right? And that's how they have the key in their possession.
You know, I don't know if you're joking or not, But
I'm just saying
there is something that kind of supports that, because remember when they're at the dinner table and Becky says she would have hated you to the black woman.
Exactly.
Yeah. So see, there actually is some like actual, yeah.
But see, just thinking about that theory to me is more fun than watching the film.
Yeah. But also, so speaking of like racism, why is it one thing I didn't understand? Another thing, there's a lot of this I don't even understand. But they get the car full of people and they kill them straight away. But when they get to the house, they don't kill anybody. I get that they probably want to keep at least someone alive so they can figure out where the key is if they can't find it. But I find it hard to believe that a bunch of neo-Nazis wouldn't kill the black woman and the black child as soon as they saw them. Especially if they've got no qualms of, like, shooting the gun out in the woods because there's a dog and stuff like that.
I'm sure the reason was that once they found the key, they would have killed everybody. They just want to find the key first, and that was it.
But especially when, like, they find out that the woman isn't even Becky's, like, mother. Like, they could deduce that she doesn't actually live there, because she's also said that that's the first time that she's been in that house. So, the reason that they even keep her alive doesn't really have any logic.
But I'll be honest, actually. I didn't quite get the reason for her character and her son in the film. They're the kind of tie the people down the house in those parts. They're not all going out of Becky at the same time. Was that their whole entire reason for them? Because even at the end of the film, Becky doesn't care about them. I don't care about them. No one really cares about them. So what are they there for?
To get Becky even more pissed off before she's got the Nazis to kill. I really feel like there's no reason that they even made them neo-Nazis. I feel like they just did that so they can give them swastika tattoos to make it feel more shocking and make them, like, automatically evil so that, you know, try to make you automatically root for the quote-unquote good guys, which that's whatever because Becky doesn't even seem like a good guy.
But that's another thing.
There's no, like... They almost never talk about anything that alludes to neo-Nazis. The only thing that gets close to it is when he says, for the Brotherhood. And then when they have like that very vague explanation for the key and he's talking about races all have a reason. Those are the only times that them being neo-Nazis even comes into play.
More of a reason that it's okay for them to die, sort of a thing.
Yeah.
I'll also have to wonder, too. This is more me speculating, like, if Kevin James really wanted to play a bad character, and I was like, yeah, make them racist and have all these bad tattoos and give me that. Yeah. Like, there's, like, two or three different scenes where, like, Kevin James just, like, shows his tattoos or they are revealed, and it's all, like, a shocking moment that's played for, but it's kind of comes off as really funny.
Yeah. None of those scenes even come close to the scene in American History X where he takes off his shirt in front of the black prisoners.
No, nothing like that comes to now.
That's how you do it. They don't have any like potency to it at all.
Devin knows how to reveal a Proud Boy.
No. I'm saying that's how you like make the reveal more impactful in a movie. You don't do it from the get-go and then like do it again halfway through the movie and then do it again three quarters of the way through the movie.
Well, that's the thing. They revealed Kevin James 3 times, you know,
because it's so
here he is in the prison. He looks like a badass walking around with chains on. Oh my god, it's him fucking,
it's cool.
Apex and him shooting some fuckers up. Oh my god, he's in the house. Ah! He's looking like Cole with his head, you know. So it's just like,
Cole, I didn't know you had a Nazi tattoo on the back of your head.
Next time I go to Cole's house, I'm gonna put it on me, probably.
Oh, yeah, you'll try with a Sharpie when you're asleep.
No, you're really Kevin James, Cole.
But, you know, the movie just honestly was... It's just honestly just bad, you know?
Yeah.
It's funny to laugh at, but it's also, like, bad. Like, if you don't have someone to watch it with and, like, laugh at...
And even then, yeah. Like, I wish there was more bad with this film to have more enjoyment out of.
Yeah, it's not, there's not enough to laugh at to make it like a so bad it's good kind of a movie. There's just more or less just mostly, to me, just bad. Like, the lack of any motivation or any arc to me is like...
No exposition on anyone.
It's like, whatever. Make a Apex spinoff.
This also feels like one of those films that is written by, like a lot of adult men thinking of like, man, what would motivate a teenage girl to just go fucking crazy and kill these guys? Yeah, I don't know. It just felt, again, going back to how like it was very paper thin for motivations. Like, I felt like no one really knew how to write her character. Even it's like, her mother died. So we'll have a scene with her on her deathbed. She's all sad, but she also hates people. And yeah, let's go with that.
And that was another thing too, is because they showed her as like pretty compassionate in those scenes, but then outside of those scenes, there is no compassion whatsoever. And I feel like if somebody did have like these psychopathic tendencies, you'd at least have some kind of warning signs a little bit prior. But I don't know, that just didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, you know, killing animals, you know, bullying, going to Hot Topic, one of those things, right?
Yeah, especially the Hot Topic one. Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense.
Listen, if you've seen Home Alone much of this kid, you kind of want to go a little crazy and do all these things. Okay? I'm just saying.
It's finally my moment.
Anything else? I mean, I don't know if we needed to say anything specific besides saying it's just illogical and pretty dumb.
Besides the scenes where like his eyeball's falling out and after she runs him over with that four-wheeler or whatever the heck it was, those are like the only highlights. And the water gun scene with the fire was kind of cool.
You could probably find a compilation on YouTube of all the scenes that are worth watching.
Yeah.
Hands down.
Half a star.
Same.
You know what? I'm going to give it a 1 star.
Fair.
Yeah.
Half a star, one star, it all works.
I wasn't mad about seeing Kevin James on the screen. I mean, it wasn't, again, with the film, with editing and music. Like, it wasn't terrible all the way around. Like, it was okay at some point, so I'm going to give it one.
You almost convinced me, but then I realized how bad the writing was, and it seems to be trying... It seems to try to trick viewers into being something that it isn't.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to leave it at 0.5 stars.
That's fair.
There's absolutely no character that I give any shit about.
Apex.
Yeah, well, even then.
Even then, I don't. Not really.
Like, Apex. He's the only one that I start to kind of, you know, like, yeah, he does kind of want to go a better way. But really, that's all because he's killed a bunch of kids.
The other thing about Apex 2, he kind of reminds me of the big tall guy in the redone version of the Longest Yard. You know, the one with Adam Sandler?
Oh, yeah, the one who plays ping pong?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why. It's kind
of... Oh, yeah.
It's funny how it's running with Apex.
So you almost convinced me to go to a star, but... No.
No. Wow.
I think it's on the same level as Cats.
Same,
for the most part.
Can't believe you insult Cats like that.
All right. Well, with that all said, Cole didn't give anything a 2.5 today.
Woo! Yeah.
Good on him.
I was really close to it with that first film, though.
But his head does look like Kevin James.
It does not. So.
It really does.
Not.
I mean, okay. Well, agree to disagree. So. Thanks everybody for joining us on the UFO today. It's been a blast off. I don't know.
You really gotta stop with the endings.